You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Guten Morgen und herzlich willkommen auf den Anarchaeologist Podcast. Is it podcast in German? I can't remember. Is podcast the same?
It's a podcast in German as well, yeah.
And today I have a wonderful guest with me. I'm speaking to the man behind Archaeology in 3D on Twitter, Mr. Ike Jagermann, who is a student at Berlin University. Today we're talking about digital archaeology. And I mean digital archaeology because I do have to define this. Digital archaeology in the sense of digitizing archaeology. Because for some reason, digital archaeology seems to apply to a lot of different things. So today we are talking about transforming archaeological artifacts and sites and structures into the digital world. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Like, what are you studying at the moment?
It's nice to be here. I'm studying at Berlin University, and I'm just about to start writing my master's thesis. And I'm also working at a freelance archaeology bureau at Brandenburg, a little city maybe 50 kilometers away from Berlin. And I'm using there these methods to document our trenches and features and findings.
So are you using any complicated technology to do this, or is it something that you think other people can pick up easily?
I think it's very easily, because you just have to take these pictures and then you have to use this program, and it's pretty intuitive right now. So I think everyone can do it after maybe a week or so learning the stuff.
I have to ask, is it as complicated as GIS?
No.
Okay.
It's definitely not as complicated.
Okay, we're safe, guys. We're safe.
Yeah.
And obviously, you mentioned before we started talking, you mentioned you use proprietary software. What's the software called?
The software is called Agisoft, and it's from Russia. It's right now out of the beta. It's finished its beta, I think, a year ago. Maybe 2 years I'm using this software. Not so sure.
So I would say you're kind of like an expert, right?
Yeah, I'm playing with that kind of stuff for a long time, so yeah. Maybe.
We'll call you an expert, okay? We'll call you an expert. That's okay. We're not shy to say that on this show. Don't worry. No, I'm kidding. So basically, that's really, really, really interesting. So what kind of stuff do you digitize? I mean, I said earlier, you know, all kind of artifacts and features, but can you take us through some of the things that you've recently digitize or take photos of?
So because we are using it at our excavations on the street, mm-hmm. At the bureau, I'm digitizing trenches and profiles, so normal features on an excavation. And at home, I digitize findings from our university. Right now, I'm getting thousands of pictures from findings to use them in my master's thesis. But I also did some stuff with finds from Brandenburg. And I've just tried to digitize whole buildings, like a church and a house that's currently what was turned down to the ground. So it's lost now. But with the 3D models, I think some historian who would like to look at the faces of the building should be fine with the pictures.
And obviously, that's a lot of data to work with. I mean, you're talking about lots and lots and lots of pictures. So, I mean, it would be difficult for, like, what kind of record do you build up with this digital stuff? I mean, is it one single 3D file, or is it kind of a set of collection of pictures? What happens with these 3D objects?
For example, you took a church or a freestanding building, and when you go around with your camera and took as many photos as you like, there's the first thing you have. It's best to use uncompressed photos, like TIFF and RAW. So you have about maybe 100 photos. Each is 100 megabyte. You have great amount of data.
Oh, that's horrible.
And after this, you have to align the photos mm-hmm. From the program. So you get a project file from Agisoft with all the point clouds and meshes and textures in it. But to use them furthermore for maybe rendering or analyzing the point clouds, you have to export them as well. And each time you process a step further, the data gets bigger. So you have to calculate with very high data amounts.
I mean, that's crazy. So you must have...
The church has about 600 megabyte for only the point cloud, and the texture is about 40 megabyte. So it's you have to buy enough space on hard disks.
So do you have like an army? Do you have like an army of hard disks or something, like a big huge server rack or something? Because I mean, like, okay, 640 meg for one like site is not too bad, but I'm assuming that you've got quite a few things. So I mean, that's massive. What happens if one of your hard disks fails, or you're going to go raid?
I will kill myself, maybe. I have several hard disks lying around here. I have no idea how to use all the data for my master's thesis. I think I will get a server or something like this. Anything with a backup device. But right now it's working with external hard drive. And they are cheap like never before, so you can get a terabyte for about 50 euros. So that's not the problem, I think.
Yeah, but obviously then it comes down to your actual computer equipment, because handling that level of memory can be taxing on some computers. I mean, I'm assuming you have your own little workstation, you know, you don't use one of those old university computers. I don't know, university computers always seem to be, well, they seem to be a bit on the old side. I don't know about how it is in Germany, but they're not the best of computers.
I have a pretty normal computer. It's like mid-range from the processing power, because I want to show my master's thesis that everyone can do it. So my PC is about 2 years old, 3 years old, and it's not the finest thing in the world. It's no workstation with maybe 8 cores and 100 gigabyte of RAM or something like this. The only thing that's really important is the SSD I have put in it, but only for processing the meshes afterwards. That really speed things up. But yeah, normally I take the model, the photos, go home, and process them overnight. So the computer is processing the files and I sleep, because it could take a while sometimes.
No, of course. And I think it's great that, you know, it is accessible to everyone. I mean, have you always had an interest in digitizing archaeology, or where did your interest with archaeology start?
In Germany, you had to do something like a military service. But I was a punk at that time in my life, so I don't want to go to the military.
Once a punk, always a punk. Would that make you a punk archaeologist?
No, I don't have red hair anymore. So.
Oh. Okay, show's over. Right, guys, he's not a punk archaeologist. Don't want to talk to him. All right, bye. No, go on, sorry.
So you have to do some social service or something like this with mostly old people. But there was an opportunity at my hometown to do it at an archaeology department of our city, state department. So I did it, and I was excavating for maybe 1.5 years with these people, and they showed me everything from digging to what is a find, what's nothing, what is a layer in the sand. Yeah, it was pretty amazing, and after that I started studying, so it was pretty much luck. And there I also tried the first 3D tools at AutoCAD.
Ah, okay. So before you did your Zivildienst, there were, like, you had no archaeology interest, or...
As a child, I wanted to become a paleontologist. So, yeah.
Okay. Oh, same here.
Like dinosaurs and stuff. But, I think I wanted always to be an archaeologist. So there were opportunities to do it, and I become very lucky.
That's good. I'm glad you became lucky, because now I'm talking to you about your luck, of course. Now, obviously, you know, digital archaeology is something very new to a lot of people. And, I mean, do you find that people think it's a bit too complicated, you know? Or how do you think archaeology in the near future will become? Will it become more digital? And how are we going to deal with old records that we have? Do we digitize everything or just new stuff? What do you think?
Since my civilians, I'm digitizing for bureaus. They are all drawings of excavations to get whole plans of the situations. So we are digitizing every old thing right now via computer-aided designs. But I think it will get more and more digital methods right on the excavation. But there will always be the drawing of scribbles from trenches. What feature is more grainy? You can't digitize the soil. You can draw. Maybe this sand is this and this is this. But if it's the same color, you will not have it in your 3D model. So it will be lost. So you have to write these things down. You have to make sketches of things. So this part will never leave. But the whole drawing of trenches and features and surfaces will become less important over the years.
And what do you think will take their place? Like, instead of drawing pictures, what do you think archaeology should be doing?
I don't know. In England, if you do it as well. But more and more firms here at Germany are using the Total Station to document their features. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of loss of information because they only get... the shape, and that's it, the shape and height. But no color, no texture, nothing like this. And I think the rest will be documented via photographs or 3D models.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the big things about recording data is that you obviously can't record absolutely everything because, you know, what's the point in, you know, there's some information you don't really need to record. But that's information that's not important to us now, in the present. What about information that we lose that may be used in the future? What about that? I mean, when we're doing all this recording, you know, a lot of people kind of think, oh, well, we've got everything recorded. We got the shape and the size looking, and we got the color, and we got everything we need. But isn't that just what we need right now?
If you work outdoors and you grab a couple of archaeologists and show them one surface with maybe 17 post holes, every one of them will interpret the surface differently. They will mark the features differently when they are not as clear, maybe a little less visible. So right now, archaeology right on the site is a lot about interpretation. Many of my former bosses let us clear the surface, and then they go around and just scribble around the features we have to document. And with one of them, I was also doing the drawing on the PC after this, and there he took the old photos and said, no, that was not right on the side. We have to do it like this, like here in the photo. I was the wrong there, and now we do it like this. So right now we are not documenting very... objective, I think. It's more like a subjective view on the things. And I think with digital imaging and maybe total stations, we get more data around. You get more height points. Even in a 3D model, you get about 17 million height points for your surface, so you don't have to measure it anymore.
I'm actually interested now in the theoretical side, like of archaeology in Germany. I mean, do you think we shouldn't interpret at the trowel's edge, as Hodder once famously said? I mean, you know, what do you think? I don't know how it is in Germany. Actually, is it like how do people work?
Yeah, just like I said, they look at the features and the things they see, they mark for us to document. But I think we should document everything on the site that we can, because sometimes some archaeologists just say, oh no, that's suffering from an animal duck, so don't document this. So it's only on the photo, not on the drawing, and stuff like this. Because, yeah, sometimes these animal holes are post holes, and they were undocumented. So I think it would be nice to have less interpretation right on the site and more objective drawing and documentation.
Well, how do you find archaeology in Germany then? You know, just generally, how are other archaeologists? I mean, here in the UK, a lot of the time archaeologists feel a little bit undervalued and, well, they're a little bit underpaid. There's not a lot of money going around for archaeologists. So
I think
it's the same in Germany.
The same problem all around the world, because people like to visit an excavation and get this warm feeling of past and like to hear the stories. But when we arrive at an excavation because someone likes to build a house or a street or something like this, the people aren't friendly anymore, especially the people who live there or have to pay us for it. Because in Germany, someone who wants to build a house has to pay for the excavation.
Yeah, that's very similar to here as well. Any new development needs archaeological survey.
Yeah. And there isn't enough money to document everything. There is no money, there is no time to document things, so we have to be very fast. You have to be agile on the site, and you have to be very diplomatic with the other people on the building site.
And like, obviously there's then a lot of solidarity between archaeologists, right? I mean, is there a big divide between, say, archaeologists in academia and archaeologists who work commercially? I mean, obviously, you've got a bit of both because you both are a student and you work for a company. So, I mean, do you think there's the divide in Germany between archaeologists there?
When you study archaeology in Germany, you have to do maybe a month or so in the field to become your bachelor degree. And you have to do it on a university excavation. And university excavations are absolutely different to what we do in the field for commercial reasonings. Because you have time, you know, everything gets explained, there's nobody yelling at you, do it faster, get out of the way, things like this. So every student who has digging experience from the university is pretty afraid of working outside the first time. Because they get afraid on the site because people yell at them. It's different. And I think the excavations from universities are, they are totally different to the same place year after year, and it's no pressure to finish it. So they got the time, but they have to explain everything to the newbies in archaeology. So it took the time. And outside we have no time, no money, and people become scared at the first time, but after that they are fine, I think, most of them.
That's good. And obviously archaeology is important because the past is important, and a lot more important than people value it, I think. Especially over here, I always feel as if the past is almost seen as like a leisurely thing. You know, if we've got the luxury of indulging about our past, rather than seeing that the past is very much influencing us right now. I mean, how do you feel that people deal with history in Germany and the past through the eyes as an archaeologist? I know that's a very complicated question.
Yeah, that's a little bit, I don't know to say it. There are two types of reasoning with the past. On the one side, we have big museums, like in Berlin, the new museum that opened a couple of years ago. You have to stand there in line for about 6 hours to get in there. And that for a year. The first year you couldn't get in there without booking an online ticket for a time slot, and then you have to be there and then you have to wait. So it's amazing how people treat new museums. The Viking show at Berlin a couple of months ago, there were thousands and thousands of people visiting it. So people are interested in the past, but the archaeology is, for the most people, they find it interesting, but a little bit useless, I think. So they like to go in museums, but they don't like the archaeology. We get cut in spendings, and there are several tries to change the law for big building projects to don't get archaeology involved so much. So that's always a fight.
Wait, like the biggest developments, as in the ones that can actually pay archaeologists easily and will probably, you know, cause the biggest amount of damage to an archaeological site. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Oh, my word.
Because it's only a very small amount of money archaeology will cost. But there's also, they always try to get around it. So right now we have the right structures, I think. We have departments who have to overlook all these building processes. And we have a law that archaeology excavations have to be when there is something. But the people try to get around it. It's pretty amazing sometimes. Yeah, we started early. We don't know that nobody called you because, yeah, the house is built. I'm sorry for this. Yeah,
seriously?
We have, oh, had this thing. And it's not only private persons. It's only also big building projects. So, yeah.
In the UK, we're kind of obsessed with the Romans for some reason. And we like a bit of Iron Age stuff. But other parts of history are kind of, well, they're not really talked about in archaeology. I don't know how it is in Germany. What kind of time periods do people really like in Germany?
That depends on where you live. Yeah, because when you go to Western Germany, it's mostly Romans and things like this.
Okay.
All right, I'm here with Jordan Harbinger from The Art of Charm, and he's going to tell us what the Art of Charm podcasts are all about. Go ahead, Jordan.
Hey, sure. So thanks for the opportunity. Basically, what we do at AOC, this is the show that we wish we had 10 years ago, and I'm 34 now. So there's a lot of folks that are 20s and 30s, and we look at how we live our lives and the way that we do things, and it's always that, if I had known, if I had only known. So what I'm doing with The Art of Charm and what we're doing as a team here is we bring together the best minds in pretty much every industry to teach people how to crush it in life with their relationships, at work, etc. So it's like having a mix of experienced mentors teaching you their expertise and packing all their research and testing and tough lessons, school of hard knocks or otherwise, into a curriculum. And we're very practical, which is great for your sort of scientific audience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. This is great for networking, for just learning some personal skills that you can use on the job, and for finding jobs and your relationships with people.
Yeah. So we talk about things like body language, the way you sit, stand, walk, and talk, networking, how to follow up with the network, how to be authentic when you're creating relationships for work. Because a lot of people think networking is like, here's my business card, give me a call when you want to buy a used car. And it's like, no, it's about giving, it's about relationships. But since people don't have a game plan, they kind of ignore it. And especially in your field, they're probably thinking, oh, I really hope my work stands up for itself someday and I get that promotion. And it's like, well, it's all about who you know. And you can either say, oh, it's all about who you know and I hate that. Or you can be like, thank goodness it's all about who you know, because I'm never going to be the top of this industry until it's too late for me to care, right?
Right. All right, so go check out the Art of Charm podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. And you can find them also on www.theartofcharm.com.
Or the early medieval and high medieval parts, like Charles the Great, for example, at Cologne. But here in Eastern Germany, you have mostly Slavic archaeology or Neolithics, because maybe it's a problem from the newer history when Germany was divided. The Eastern part only have the Slavs. The Western had the Romans. So, yeah.
And actually, it's quite interesting I was reading about recently about archaeology in the USSR, you know, talking about archaeology under, you know, the communists, which was, I thought, quite interesting, because there was somewhere in, where is it? God damn it. I can't even remember now. It was either in Hungary or modern Czech Republic, where they'd actually rebuilt several old buildings and reconstructed them it to like what they used to be like. I mean, that's quite interesting, but obviously it plays into the old ideology. Do you think that those Cold War ideologies still exist somewhere?
I think that...
Is that a dangerous question?
Yeah. It is. Pretty much. But I think there's always ideology in archaeology. For example, I live in Eastern Germany and I study here. And most of the old literature that's published about findings here had some part of Marxism in it. So, for example, there's a great culture, the Billendorf Gruppe. It's an Iron Age part. Mm-hmm. And to get published, the author had to get in there a percentage of Marxism and Leninism and things like this. So you read this book, and it's pretty much awesome. You get the findings, you get the settlements, and then you get a whole chapter about how these people lived without kings and queens and anyone was working for the greater good. You get these in footnotes and things like this. So yeah, they have these ideology focused things in it. But right now we're getting things like this again. For example, there was a big, I think, was it a colloquium? Conference or something like this about the Slavs in Europe. And it was mostly paid from the EU. And it was the greater picture they would like to paint was all these countries were one connected thing, like the European Union now in the past. So you have trading with the Slavic people. You have, pretty much connections. You have a connected Europe. You have people who travel from places to places. And all these things we get right now. So it's only a different type of ideology that is written there. I don't know if I could make myself clear.
No, I completely understand. So it's basically almost like they're projecting the present onto the past, in a way, aren't they? They're kind of saying, therefore, you know, it's always been like that. That's why Europe is so good.
Yeah, things like this.
And, yeah.
We have also older examples from the Third Reich, where archaeology...
Okay, that's 30 minutes in. 30 minutes in.
Yeah, we made it.
It took us 30 minutes.
Their archaeology was used to deploy demands on land, like in the East End. Yeah. So, yeah, we always have this.
I mean, I like to describe this show and myself as a little tiny bit Marxist, because in a very weird kind of way, you know, to me, there is an institution of history that people kind of say, oh, it's in the past, therefore it happened and it's important. And, you know, oh, people in the past did this, therefore we should, there's almost this like inflation of this, you know, authority of the past. And I want to take that down. I want to make the past, you know, for everyone and by everyone. So I'm really interested in, for example, not really Marxist readings of the past, but making archaeology for everyone. I mean, we're seeing this with stuff like open access. I mean, will you be interested in making your kind of digital digitizations of the past? Will you be interested in giving them, like making them available for other people to see?
Yeah, I would pretty much like that. I would enjoy more to get paid for this, but when you, I'm writing this blog, and I publish there sometimes some of the models. But when I will finish my master's thesis, I would like to try to upload all the all the data to some device. I don't know, maybe ResearchGate or some OpenHS community to store it there. Maybe the Internet Archive. Or something like this, so everyone can use the photos again and use them again with new programs, better algorithms and things like this. Because I think there's plenty of more information in these pictures. So yeah, we have to make archaeology open to everyone. There's no use in making big books that people have to buy for hundreds and hundreds of euros. So the more we can publish for everyone, is easier to establish an archaeology thinking, and maybe it's getting better on the side then.
Yeah. It's quite interesting, actually, when you're talking about 3D objects and when you've digitized these things. I mean, is there an easy way for people to kind of get the 3D file and and view it? I mean, is there an easy way? Like, what kind of formats are 3D objects?
From a technical standpoint. When you only have the point cloud, the points in space, you have an ASCII file. So there's only coordinates and a color for every point. So it's only text. But to make it viewable, you have to use, like, you can implement 3D models in PDFs, for example. Many people know how to use them. Yep. You can show them online using Java and HTML5. That's a pretty easy way and pretty fast for also viewing very big models, like Sketchfab, the one place I put my models in right now. But you can write your own Java application to make your models viewable. You can get them as an object file. You can put them in game engines. There are plenty of free game engines right now, and explore them.
Actually, video games and archaeology has come up quite a few times on this show. Maybe because I'm a bit of a gamer. Maybe that is.
Yeah.
Maybe I secretly just want to be a video game archaeologist. But we've talked about, you know, recreating the past, you know, in video games, and the inherent problems and struggles there are in that. But it'd be quite interesting, though, if you had, you know, you took models that you recreated models and just stuck them, you know, in a game world. That would be kind of cool. I mean, could you imagine one of those game engines where you log into a server and it shows a site, and as the site gets added to, the game world gets updated more and more. That would be really interesting. I'm planning it. No.
There are several tries. There are several virtual museums that you can go through in the internet. There's also a virtual museum in Second Life, I think. These try to make the internet in 3D, so Second Life is still alive. But there's a big danger in it, because when you reconstruct things or you publish models of things, there is... okay, let me start again. When you give someone a beautiful colored picture of something like a Germanic village or something like this, he will remember this, and he always will think, this is how it looked. And it's for sure. And he will never forget this. And after you established this picture once, you can't take it back. And it's pretty difficult to change these views. And it's that's the great difficulty in 3D models in archaeology, because they are easy to make. They are fast to make, even reconstructions. But when you do make them, you have to be very careful, because after that, you can't change them. Yeah. The people will never forget them. And Vikings with horns, for example.
Oh, yeah, of course. But Vikings with horns. Actually, you know, to be absolutely fair, nobody knows anything about the Vikings now, because everybody at once thought, oh, they're Viking raiders. No, they're nice farmers. No, they're Viking raiders. Yeah. And it has gone a bit of a circle, you know, because I don't think people can handle... I don't know, it just seems as if there's a complexity to the Vikings, which is really interesting, but it never seems to be communicated properly. And communicating in archaeology, that's my thing. That's what I like doing.
Yeah, and it works fine. I really like to hear your podcast.
Exactly. Oh, thank you. Stop at you. But yeah, no, you're completely right. But then isn't it better to create unfinished archaeological artifacts? You know, like artifacts as they are digitized rather than completely reconstructed. I mean, from your blog, I can see that you've done several 3D models that are exactly as the artifact is, rather than a full reconstruction. I'll link in the text below, but I'm just interested, what do you think? Do you prefer doing reconstructions, or do you like just mapping out what you got in front of you?
Reconstruction is awesome, and it's great fun to do it. There is this house I reconstructed there, and you have to think about many things that have to be for this house. You have to think, how is the wood connected? What is aesthetically possible? How do we get light in there? What about the smoke from fires and things like this? You pretty much rethink this house again. And then you find a solution, or maybe a thing that you like, but it's constructed history. It's not a real image. But people who see this reconstruction will think, yeah, it's the real image. But I think we have to reconstruct things because people don't like to, they don't like to see the things singular. So maybe you have a collection of finds, you present the people and say, yeah, these are the stuff they used in this village. The first question will be, how does the village look? How did the houses look? What cloth, what color of cloth were the people wearing? And you have to answer that questions. Because otherwise, the people won't listen long enough. So it will stay difficult, very difficult.
I'm just wondering, how do you, when you're doing reconstructions, convey the fact that they are created, like, by you, and they're interpreted by you? How do you get that message across?
Mostly with don't rendering them photorealistic or something like this. Because I can't. So, no, I don't have an answer to this. You can write down on it. It's only a hypothetical reconstruction, but people don't reach text in images.
Because I've had this thing, actually going back to video games, is I've always said Assassin's Creed has done it well, because obviously Assassin's Creed is, the idea is that, you know, these virtualization is made from memory. Right, and you've got the three tiers. You've got the person in the past, you've got the player, and between them is Desmond. And so you've so what happens is, occasionally there are places that you can't go, and you know, you can see these graphical artifacts of places that are not properly reconstructed, and you're always reminded that this is a created world. And I think that's kind of cool. I don't know if you've played Assassin's Creed.
I've played several parts of Assassin's Creed, and I must say the reconstruction of Rome in Brotherhood, I think, was pretty awesome. But these artifacts were not enough, because they constructed whole quarters of this city, and there's no artifact, nothing that reminds you that you are playing a game, for example. And some of the smaller buildings are totally generic. But this image of Rome is planted. That would be Rome. It's pretty good image. They get the structure of the walls right. They got pretty much everything without, maybe not the graffiti and things like this. But I think when I don't have played the actual Assassin's Creed, it's about Paris. And I think everyone is telling you, yeah, it's the greatest historical image from Paris ever, but it's also filled with things no one can know, but all people know, yeah, we know how Paris looks, look at Assassin's Creed, we don't have to dig anymore, we know there was a building, things like that. Maybe in 10 years we have this discussions with people at the museum.
Yeah, I mean, that for me is, like, that annoys me, because obviously that's not the point. You know, Assassin's Creed, the whole point is a game, and we have to keep thinking it is a game. And this is the thing, you know, it's a game, it's made, it's you're being told it's made. That's what I love about archaeology and video games, is because you know instinctively you're playing a game that was specifically created. It was made by somebody. Somebody said, we're making this street here, we're making that street here, we're making this texture for this. That's what's great about video games, because you have that mindset. And it is really annoying when people, like, that's what Assassin's Creed, the first Assassin's Creed, is so good, because it kept reminding you, it kept bringing you out of the illusion and then putting you back in. And like, this is what annoys me about Assassin's Creed 2 and the other ones, is that you don't step out of the past created world enough. And this is one of those things about digital archaeology, that we have to always remind people that they are seeing a created past. So I think what we need to do is, we need to, you know, shock people. We need to make reconstructions that, like, maybe a reconstruction that kind of scares people, you know. I want to see, like, for example, you know, you have, say you have in a digital reconstruction, you have the present day image, you know, it builds up then into a wonderful reconstruction of the past and then falls down again. It says, no, this is just one way that it could have been. You know, I think we should really, really try and fight against the idea that the past just happened and it can just be summed up in one image. We have to fight, and, you know, viva la revolution and all that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I get a bit excited. Mm. I don't know if you can tell.
A little bit, yeah. You can't establish things that shock people. For example, the roof of houses made of hay or something like this. They have to be pretty much more sharper. It's more like these Swedish houses that have very, spitz, very narrow. Yeah, never mind. They have a totally different construction because they get wet otherwise. But you can't establish a thing like this because all people say, that looks wrong, because they know how these houses have to look. Yeah, you can fight, but I don't think you will ever win this fight, because people will remember things in their subconsciousness even better. So,
damn subconsciousness. We need to destroy subconsciousness. That's what my next valiant attempt. But I think archaeology isn't just, you know, it's not just about, you know, talking about the past. It is very much about in the present as well. And, you know, the way we think about the past is very much how we deal with things for the future. You know, I've always said that, you know, the past is created in the present for the future, and therefore our greatest knowledge of the past is in the future. So therefore, in the present, we have to prepare ourselves for the future of the past. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would totally agree to that.
despite my ramblings about, I like saying that, though. It confuses people. I like that. Because, as you said, you know, people have an idea of what archaeology is, what the past is, and I think we should, you know, try a little bit better to confuse people a little bit and say, well, you know, and not confuse people in a kind of like, you don't know what I'm thinking. It's more of a kind of like saying, you have these preconceived notions and prejudices, but I'm not going to conform to those, and I'm going to go and do something different. I say, wearing a jumper that is really unfashionable, and, you know...
Yeah, what? I'm wearing every time an overall on the...
See? There's an archaeological fashion, you know? That's the thing. Archaeologists love to say, oh, yes, no, of course, we like thinking beyond things, and then suddenly everybody, archaeologists dress the same, you know? Oh, dear. Do archaeologists dress badly in Germany as well?
I think it comes with the profession. Yeah, it's totally normal, but I'd like to dress like this. Yeah.
Exactly. Do archaeologists in Germany have beards? Like, all the male archaeologists have beards? Or is that just a UK thing? Think about it.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I have a little bit beard, but no, not everyone. No?
Just checking, because I think it's very widespread over here. I'm not making generalizations. What's that? But do you think what do you think about the future of archaeology? We're gonna make it? We're gonna survive all these trials and tribulations? What do you think what are we gonna achieve?
I think archaeology will always be a part of the normal sciences, and we always will get underpaid jobs at archaeology. But yeah, I think people, despite they don't like us when they dig, when we dig at their houses, they pretty much enjoy museums and documentations on the TV more and more, and they like to experience these 3D things on the internet. They like the reconstructed images. Archaeology will stay, but have to evolve, had to become better communicated to more and more people, and the hypothetical part of archaeology had to become more, for the common citizen. They have to understand that we only construct images of the past that could be, but not the exact past. And I think this is the most difficult thing.
Is there any way we can do it easily, or is it going to be just an uphill struggle?
easy way, no.
There's never an easy way in archaeology, is there? Never an easy way.
With all the new ways to inform people, the whole internet structure and the dying of the normal television shows, I think it will become more easy to communicate history and archaeology to people who are already interested, and these people will interest other people who were interested in it before. So it's the crowd will do their thing, and it's a little bit like a snowball system, and we have to keep on moving with this, and then maybe in the near future archaeology will become a very famous part in our lives.
Exactly. And that's what we look forward to. Thank you very, very, very much, Mr. Yagaman. Yagaman. I think Yagaman. Oh, thank you, Miss. Thank you, Ike. Is it Ike or Ick or where? I've not actually come across that. Ike, there we go. It's a really cool name, I must say.
My mother had humor there.
Anyway, thank you very, very much for being on the show, and hopefully we will hear from you again. If people want to find you on the internet, where do they go?
They can follow my Twitter. It's Prehist3D. Or visit my blog that you will link below, I think.
Yes, don't worry. And that's it for today's show. Remember, you can check out all the other wonderful shows on the Archaeology Podcast Network. Stay tuned for more. See you in a fortnight's time. Auf Wiedersehen!
Auf Wiedersehen.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.